This is Climate One, changing the conversation about energy, economy, and the environment. As the science guy, television's Bill Nye inspired a generation of children to love science as much as he does.
A lot of people of my generation attribute their interest and love of science to Bill Nye.
But these days, he's speaking to a new audience.
Nowadays, I'm talking to adults, and I'm not mincing words. Climate is changing. It's our fault. We got to get to work on this.
But Bill Nye doesn't think we should leave it at that.
There's three things we want for everybody in the world. We want clean water, renewably produced, reliable electricity, and access to the internet. With those three things, we could, I believe, provide a high quality of life for everyone on Earth.
Bill Nye, the science guy, up next on Climate One. Welcome to Climate One, changing the conversation about America's energy, economy, and environment. Climate One conversations with oil companies and environmentalists, Republicans and Democrats, are recorded before a live audience and hosted by Greg Dalton. Got climate deniers? Who are you going to call?
America's favorite scientist, Bill Nye, the science guy. Greetings!
You know him as host of the Emmy-winning children's show, Bill Nye, the Science Guy. But since ending the program in 1999, Nye and his famous bow tie have taken on a new challenge, stopping the spread of anti-scientific thinking across the world. Bill Nye, the Science Guy. In a new documentary, director Jason Susberg shadows Nye as he goes toe-to-toe with outspoken climate deniers and travels the world to show the causes and effects of climate change. On today's program, Nye and Susberg talk about filming the documentary Bill Nye, Science Guy, as well as the state of climate science and how to save the planet. Here's your host, Greg Dalton.
One of the most dramatic moments in the film Bill Nye, Science Guy is when you go to Greenland and you go into this scary-looking tube cave tunnel down into the ice. So Bill Nye, tell us what you learned there and why it matters to people who will never go to Greenland.
You're not going to Greenland? What I learned that it's all real. So for years, I have used the ice cores in my public talks. And by that, by used, I mean, I did visit, years ago, I did visit the ice core lab in Golden, Colorado. It's Denver. It's a suburb of Denver, a zip code next to Denver, where we keep the ice from all over the world, like where you went to visit and stuff. So, but in Greenland, we got to participate and carry pieces of ice around and label the plastic bags and stuff. So this very cool, I'm a mechanical engineer because I like this kind of thing. So it's very cool hollow drill bit, and you pick up, you pull up, I guess it's 0.70 centimeter pieces of ice. And you can see the layers of snow, just like tree rings. And in the ice, are you in? As the snowflakes fall, they capture bubbles of air between the tines of the snowflakes, and they get compressed, and the air is trapped in the ice indefinitely. You pull it up, and you can tell the ancient atmosphere. And I used to tell this story in my college talks and stuff, but then when you're actually there and actually get to see it and hold it, it's really cool. In fact, it's really cold, freaking cold.
So when people say, we're not sure what the climate was like.
Yes, we are, is the response. Excuse me. Yes, we are.
There's something of an anti-science movement in this country, and you talk
really
about that in the film. Let's hear a clip of Bill Nye's Science Guy talking about this anti-science movement in the United States.
CO2 is rising. Bill Nye is just going around saying CO2 is up, therefore global warming is dangerous, we should be concerned. It's not dangerous.
The world is getting warmer. It's continually getting warmer.
If I'm right, the reversals will lead to a degree and a half cooling. If you're right, they're not. But what are we worried about right now?
Okay.
What
we have this increasing anti-science movement in the United States.
Our president is worried about global warming. What a ridiculous situation.
quotes of Fox News and other commentators, then candidate Donald Trump, from Bill Nye, the Science Guy, the documentary. Bill Nye, why has that movement, that effort, been so effective in this country?
Well, we're here at Climate One, yeah? You guys tell me, but my understanding is the fossil fuel industry has been very successful at introducing the idea that plus or minus 2% is somehow the same as plus or minus 100%, that scientific uncertainty is the same as doubt about the whole thing. And that's not accurate, but it is, I think, writ large, the fossil fuel industry.
So Jason Sussberg, there's some really interesting characters in this film. Tell us about Joe Bastardi, who is just straight from Central Casting.
Yeah, Joe is a trained meteorologist. He has his degree from Penn State University. It's the same university that Dr. Michael Mann teaches at, who was at Climate One a couple months ago with Tom Tolles. And he is a serious meteorologist. He works for an organization called Weather Bell. He's actually a very good long-range forecaster. He's serious at what he does. However, and Bill can attest to this, he just doesn't see the link between CO2 and our rising climate. So it's a little mysterious. I don't know what his motivations are. We met him, but it's still unclear why he comes to the conclusions that he comes.
So, Bill, you spend some time with him. You go to his home. You hope you have a glass of wine. You hope that you might be able to bring him around. Did you make any progress?
Yes, so maybe. Here's what I say. If you meet people, you know, just to talk some more about me. I'm a longtime skeptic. You know, I belong to both skeptic organizations. And when someone is first exposed to the idea that astrology may not be true, that there really aren't ghosts, that nobody has psychic powers that enables them to predict with whom you will fall in love or so on, it takes somebody about 2 years to come around to that. You're like, the first time you're exposed to the idea that astrology was made up 2,000 years ago was just sort of shot in the dark, and the sun, constellations have shifted, the sun rises in a different place now than it did 2,000 years ago. It takes somebody a couple years to change their mind. So this, I look at this as chipping away. But part of odd nature of the Bastardi family is they invited us, I thought it was to dinner at 6:30 p.m., 18:30 hours, but there was no food. There were no Dorito chips. There was nothing. I'm not joking you.
He's trying to throw you off your game. They were just going to keep you kind of hungry and feed you alcohol.
Yeah, so it was weird. The whole interaction was weird. But I think you watch the film and you decide for yourself. But I think he equates the idea that 0.03%. carbon dioxide, now 0.0403% carbon dioxide, 403, that's the same number as 403 parts per million, that because that fraction is small, then its effect must be small. So he somehow went to meteorology school at a venerable university and didn't understand, or it didn't become clear to him, the greenhouse effect, greenhouse gases. You know, without this tiny fraction of carbon dioxide, there'd be no green plants. There'd be no us. I mean, for crying out loud, Joe.
And by the way, he is not alone. There's a lot of meteorologists who also have been very difficult to get on board with climate science. Jason Sussberg, also there's Garrett Bastardi, who's a very interesting character in this film. Tell us about him, because he seems really conflicted, and you're the Garrett whisperer. So.
So Garrett is, Joe's son. He's also a student at Penn State, his father's alma mater. And in the film, there's this tension between his dad's position that the Earth is not changing and humans are not controlling it, and then there's his childhood hero, Bill. And there's, the mainstream science perspective. And so Joe is kind of on this like razor's edge and he could tilt, I'm sorry, Garrett, sorry, is on this razor's edge and he could tilt either way. He could follow his father or he could listen to mainstream science. And so we left the film in an ambiguous way. We still to this day don't know what Garrett's position is, though he's basically following in his father's footsteps for now. We'll see what happens with him.
One of the points made in the film is changing the narrative. And as you know, The tobacco companies in the 50s said, we're not sure. They doubted science, famously said, doubt is our product. That was then picked up by the oil companies. And lately, it's kind of the NFL saying, we're not so sure. What do you see as the thread between those narratives about and the importance of changing that denial narrative?
Well, the word thread is good because the fossil fuel industry hired the same guys from the cigarette days, the very same people. And the NFL, you're talking about concussions?
Concussions. People say we're not sure that what causes CTE, and there's lots of people out there still playing football when the science is emerging that's pretty dangerous.
But I just feel the scale of climate change and the scale of cigarettes is way bigger than head trauma. Anyway, the threat is that denial or doubt is their friend. So I think what's going to happen as people come of age, and my claim is that climate deniers are almost universally older, that is to say, baby boomers and up. And when those guys and gals age out, can I use that term? then scientifically literate people will emerge and get to work on climate change very quickly. I mean, really fast. I think the pendulum will swing back really fast. I think when you have somebody saying there are more people at this inauguration than there were at the other one, no, there weren't. Like, that's not going to be sustainable, is a modern word. That just won't last. But the question that I think about continually, every hour of every day, is, how is it going to happen in time? Where will the curves cross? Will the deniers get aged out fast enough for the climate change embracers, let's do something abouters, to emerge? And that's why you have Climate One. Here we are. Way to go.
Let's talk about solutions. There's a lot of debate. People think it's so big. What can I do that matters? Individual action. Does individual action matter, or is it like writing a check to the federal government to pay down the national debt?
That would work. My claim is if everybody were talking about climate change, if we were talking about climate change the way we talk about what happened in Charlottesville or what happened in Texas, people would be doing something about it. If we were talking about it just every day, yes, recycle your water bottle. Don't squander water bottles. Don't squander water. Don't leave the lights on. Don't take unnecessary car trips that you don't need to take. Yes, yes, yes. Put in double pane, triple pane windows. Yes, yes, yes. But if we were talking about it the way we talk about these other issues, we'd be getting her done. And the evidence for this I present to you comes from my parents, and they're mentioned in the film. During World War II, everybody was talking about World War II. That's all they were talking about. The music, the food, everything was about winning the war. And so if we had that same idea about climate change, or from my own lifetime, the Apollo program, we're going to beat these other guys to the moon, and that will somehow achieve something. And it did, and the former Soviet Union went out of business, most of it. Some of it's still going. We would be getting her done.
But that greatest generation believed in that collective sacrifice in a way that Jason Sussberg, the millennial generation that you're part of, that grew up on Bill Nye, one of the critiques of that generation is that they want all their convenience. They want the food delivered to them. They don't do sacrifice. They think that clicking on an icon on Facebook, that's activism. So tackle that in terms of his...
Okay, I'm going to be the voice of my generation.
Yes.
I mean...
Everybody.
I mean... I just find that to be, well, first off, give us a second here. We're just emerging. This generation of millennials, we are, what, 20 to 35? There needs to be some time to see what happens with the millennial generation. I just find that to be old man shaking fist at sky and hand-wringing. If you want to talk, baby boomers have caused all the problems. So if we're impatient...
We actually did an entire Climate One podcast on a generation of sociopaths, and there's a book out there trashing the boomers for what they've done.
Well, yeah.
Very reasonable.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, I think that our generation, and Bill was absolutely instrumental in getting a lot of millennials to take science seriously. We are going to be, as Bill says, captains of industry one day. We are going to be elected leaders. And when that does happen, I think it's trending in the right direction. So I'm hopeful.
Bill Nye, if someone's young, like a millennial or below, wants to get into a climate change career, what kind of, you obviously speak to basic science more than applied science, thanks to the guidance you got from Carl Sagan. What kind of career paths would you say people ought to look to kind of really have an impact in their job, not just, you know, the, as a consumer?
Well, so keep in mind that I'm an engineer. I mean, I went to engineering school right on. I mean, I love pure science as much as the next guy, maybe more. But I became an engineer because I like bicycles and airplanes. They're fun. But there's three things we want for everybody in the world. We want clean water, renewably produced, reliable electricity, and access to the internet, or whatever the internet comes to be called in the coming decades. With those three things, we could, I believe, provide a high quality of life for everyone on Earth. In order to provide clean water, we're going to need new technologies or better technologies for, let's say, desalinating seawater, let's say capturing, or the modern word is harvesting, rainwater. But for that, we're going to need venture capitalists, we're going to need attorneys to protect intellectual property, we're going to need people to deliver the food to the people working on these things. We're going to need everybody working together. But in the beginning of all that is going to be technology, which comes from innovation, which comes from science. So let's go. It's going to be exciting. So one of my favorite stories from my own life, because really interesting, I was there. But I was a consultant to General Motors at one point. You know, I do college talks. I do talks for companies, corporations, whatever. And instead of money, I negotiated for the use of the EV1, the Electric Vehicle 1, which General Motors called this car. They didn't call it the Ventura or the Impala or the Bel Air. They called it the Impact. That's a car. That's not what you want in a car. So these same bunch of guys were in this meet. They were almost all men. There were two women, almost all men. And, you know, what we want, Bill, we want our light trucks to be 50% recyclable. No. You want them to be 100% recyclable. I sure hope I get a C in this class. So this attitude that we can't do it, I have no time for that. I have no time for that. If you think you can't do it, you sure as hell won't. So let's get to 99%. Would that be all right? But the big idea, if you're out there, people, I see some very young people. Here's what we want you to do. New fuels for jet planes, for airplanes. Some new fuel. Probably won't be algae-based oil. Probably won't be. Maybe. Probably, it could very well be hydrogen. So I want you to solve that problem. And then whoever else is out here, are there any plumbers here? You guys, I have a solar hot water system on my house. The heat is free. This is not rocket surgery, you guys. It's plumbing in a box, and it gets hot, and then you need less heat to make it hotter. Can we just do that? Let's go. Let's get her done out there. Invest in that.
This is Climate One. Today, we're talking with Bill Nye, science educator and one of the country's leading advocates for climate science. Nye and his work are the subject of a new documentary directed by Jason Sussberg. Let's continue our discussion with Nye and Sussberg. Here's Greg Dalton.
Jason Sussberg, one of the interesting points in the film, I thought, is when you actually got Bill Nye to sit down and talk with Heather Berlin, who's a neuroscientist. You kind of got him on the couch with a shrink, and he talks about some of the personal things. Tell me about setting that scene up, and was it hard to get him to do it?
Well, so Bill jokingly put his finger to his head like a gun. However, that was Bill's idea, was to introduce us to Heather Berlin, because Heather was doing a research that she stopped and now has since started again, called Your Brain on Fame. And the idea is that celebrity has an effect on your neurology. And so she set Bill through a battery of tests, personality
including
tests.
Including IQ tests.
Yeah, which we didn't show. But Bill was a very good sport in letting us, you know, take him through those battery of tests and also sitting through that sort of therapy. But it was sort of a trick for us as filmmakers to have her ask the questions that could really dive deep into who he is and what drives him and his motivations, But you know, it was sort of a narrative trick to have a real neuroscientist sit across from Bill and sort of interrogate him about his ideas.
And Bill Nye, the upshot was that you always had this drive to be famous, and yet there's parts of being famous that you don't really like.
Yeah. So everybody, the filmmakers, got my good friend Steve Wilson rambling, and he said Bill's always wanted to be famous. Sort of, what I've always wanted to be is influential. Okay, so the fame part I didn't really have worked out, I admit. But it does affect you. So Dr. Berlin, Heather, is a neuroscientist, and one of the relatively recent findings in neuroscience is your brain can change in a way that's it's changed enough you can see it on an MRI, a magnetic resonance image. And like it's been shown that talk therapy, sitting and chatting it up with a psychiatrist or whatever it would be, can change your brain over the course of a year or two. So I think that's part of her interest. You know, they love their MRIs because it's only in recent times that you could, you know, Sigmund Freud didn't have access to magnetic resonance images. So I think that's part of what's in the background. And she did get me talking. It does. That's the one part of the movie I just want to kill myself.
We're going to go time for our lightning round. I'm going to ask you to each mention of noun or a person and get your first thing that comes to your mind, unfiltered, not thinking about...
Sex. Sorry.
80% of the time, that's probably true. Jason Susburg, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt.
Clown. Wrong.
Bill Nye, science educator Carl Sagan.
Brilliant.
Jason Susburg, the Creation Museum.
Terrifying.
Troubling. Yeah.
Bill Nye, President Trump's science advisor.
Who is it?
Lost.
He has not appointed one yet. Okay, this is true or false. Jason Susburg, true or false, you know how to tie a bow tie.
After this film, yes.
Ah, you learned something. True or false, Bill Nye, you started doing stand-up comedy after winning a Steve Martin look-alike contest in 1978.
True.
Everybody want to get small. Okay.
No, it was that era. I had the arrow through the head. And so you guys, I met him eventually. It was cool. It was really a cool evening.
To see that photo. True or false, Jason Susburg, it took weeks of hard work to come up with the film title, Bill Nye, Science Guy.
True. Not kidding. We went back and forth.
True or false, Bill Nye, many opponents of nuclear power do not ground their opposition in knowledge of the science.
If that's a true or false, I guess that's true. But the problem that the nuclear industry has had is nobody wants it. That's the biggest drawback. Nobody wants a nuclear power plant around. And it is, it just objectively, everybody shoot the messenger or whatever, but this idea that you have waste products that are dangerous for 10,000 years, 10 Roman empires, some people just think that's a little irresponsible to be burying that someplace.
Jason Susburg, true or false, science is more political now than it ever has been.
I would say true, but I'm not, what do you think, Bill?
Well, here's what we like to say. Science has always been political. What you want is not to have it partisan. So something to think about. Going to the moon was an investment to win a unspoken Cold War, right? And it was nominally effective. Where do you invest in basic research? You know, without investment in the Department of Defense, you wouldn't have the internet. Without investment in space, you wouldn't have the internet.
True or false, Bill Nye, you believe in climate change.
You don't get to believe in it. It's
not a belief.
It's a thing. It's a real thing.
True or false, Bill Nye, after this show, you will go with me up to the roof and throw a watermelon off the roof of this building.
I don't think that's true.
Oh.
But I'm open-minded if you really want to do it. And you have a permit or somebody on the ground to keep from knocking somebody on the head or crushing a car. So another thing that happened to me in college, and I did not do this, but a guy threw a water balloon off the 9th floor of this building. And it, boom, dented the roof of a Volkswagen Bug.
Wow.
In other words, you know, this old saying, you can stop a locomotive with a mosquito if it's going fast enough.
Jason Sussberg, true or false, climate deniers should be ignored.
False.
Bill Nye, true or false, facts rarely change people's minds about deeply held views.
That's false. It just takes a while.
Last question, true or false, Bill Nye, selfies cause brain damage.
Wouldn't be surprised.
All right.
I'm not kidding you guys. It's this thing. It's this constant input. It's weird. Now, if you're going to take a selfie, have the camera facing the right way. Have the memory not full. Have the battery. There's a famous picture that it broke the internet where it's Neil deGrasse Tyson, me, and this other guy, Barack Obama. And Neil takes the thing freaking seriously. So Neil's getting this thing lined up, and he's thinking deep thoughts, and he wants to have the right artwork in the background, and he's got this thing going. And he takes out his phone, and the memory's full. So I took that picture. I did that.
Let's talk about food and the importance of food. People think that a lot of climate is really abstract. How important is agriculture and food and making the kind of changes that we want to make for
climate? There's no connection at all. What do you want? Of course, it's like huge.
But explain your conversion. There's a podcast on that.
My belief was that you can't know the ecosystem, that you would accidentally do something to crops that would create a super bug. You'd create some virus that you couldn't anticipate and stuff. But after I did two things. I went to Monsanto itself. Oh, we went to Monsanto. Oh, my God. Yeah. In St. Louis. I decided they really could tell. They really can tell what genes are going to do, and they really are diligent about monitoring the crops and keeping so-called sterile refuges. They're really into it. They're very, very careful about it. But Monsanto has a terrible reputation, I think, for two reasons. First of all, they used to make Agent Orange, which I don't know if you guys are of an age. The Vietnam War, they would denude Vietnam in the hopes of making battles more successful, but it had this horrible knock-on effect of giving these people this horrible disease. I guess it was cancer-related thing. And then not just Monsanto, but Pioneer, DuPont, those Syngenta, why didn't all those guys come out proudly GMO? Check us out. Our corn is even better. You know, why didn't they do that? I don't know. They're not that great at public relations. They weren't. Then the other thing I'd say, you guys, the climate is changing. Crops are going to move north from North America. They're going to move into Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta maybe. And we're going to be ready for that. The problem is the speed. It's the speed that these things are happening. And so with modern genetics, agricultural scientists, agriculture geneticists, are able to anticipate changes and make crops that are more drought resistant or more flood resistant or literally more wind resistant, which is amazing. And so there's something to it. And then on the Bill Nye Saves the World show, we had the mythic guy from Monsanto, Rob Fraley. We had a farmer, a woman from Iowa, who says she's ninth generation farmer, and a guy from the Department of Agriculture. And everybody agreed that genetically modified food has a place. It does not solve all your problems, but it has a place.
I think some of the critics of GMOs are more concerned about industrial monoculture, massive use of glyphosate. It's what it enables. It's not just the GMOs themselves. It's the other things that
they enable. Well, so you guys, as far as herbicides, if you like herbicides, who doesn't? Glyphosate is actually pretty benign compared to some of this stuff.
You know, even though the state of California has listed it as a carcinogen.
Well, it may be. And my understanding is it may be. I'm not an expert on that, but compared to a lot of other stuff, it's not as bad as other things. And another big idea, you guys, okay, whatever, don't shoot the messenger, but something to keep in mind is farming is not natural. You know, if you stop farming, nature goes back to forests or prairies or whatever it was. And that's sort of a big idea that I think people lose sight of. Without humans just going crazy, you would not have a farm. You could certainly not have 7.4 billion people eating around the world. So just sort of keep that in mind. But watch the film. I haven't seen it yet, Food Evolution. Another claim they make for you to consider. Oh, yeah, the other thing I did, I went to the Monarch Venture. So this is kind of a hippie titled thing. It was held in Minneapolis. So they got people, the corporate pigs, Rob Fraley and people from DuPont, from Pioneer Seeds, and the people that monitor the flight of monarch butterflies. And they got them all together. And the farmers and the cowboys should be friends. Oh, sorry. They got them all together, and they decided that if they had milkweed, which I like to call milk flower, it may look like a weed to you and me, but to a monarch butterfly, it's their source, it's their sustenance, it's what they got to have. If they had these patches of milkweed along the flyways, which is a cool word, where the monarchs make their highway in the sky, then they could sustain large populations of monarchs without screwing up farms very much. Because farmers don't like milkweed. It takes over everything. And it's worked. The last 3 years, the monarch population has gotten bigger. But 3 years is not much of a sample size. So stay tuned. Is it because of El Nino, rainfall, or is it because of the refuges? But here's what I'm saying is everybody acknowledges there was a problem with the monarch populations going down. And everybody, both the hippies and the corporate pigs, wanted to do something about it. So that was really moving for me. I was really impressed with that. I paid my own way, you guys.
Speaking of severe weather, I'd like to get you a couple of explainers before we go to audience questions, because you're known as the great explainer. We've had a lot of fires, a lot of hurricanes recently. Starting with the fires, what is the climate connection with the fires in America?
Oh, so it was big rainfall in the spring. Then it got really dry and super hot in the summer. So when things started burning, there was a lot of fuel. And man, how many people were not affected by the fires? Yeah, everybody was affected by the fires. Everybody either had their lives destroyed, or that you know somebody who had his life or her life destroyed. You guys, let's get to work on this problem. Come on, let's go.
And Hurricane Harvey, Irma, Maria.
Nothing to worry about. Everything's fine. So there's everything all at once. There's, it's never, as we say in airplane crashes, it's never any one thing. So Houston has all this hardscape, huge, fastest growing large city in the U.S., maybe in the Western Hemisphere or some crazy statistic like that. And so there's all this asphalt, so-called sealed roads, waterproof roads. And when it rained and stayed there, the problem just got worse and worse and worse. So my understanding is after Hurricane Katrina, people's houses were flooded and ruined and they'd lost everything. And if someone had gone to those people, they interviewed people and said, okay, here's half the value of your house and everything you own. Would you abandon your house? Everybody said, yeah. But after it drains and there is no relief and you can't sell it, nobody wants to buy your soaked up house, you just stay. So then the problem happens again. And I wonder all the time, is there going to be a future? People just start leaving Houston, Corpus Christi, Pensacola, Miami Beach. Those are two different cities. Just start leaving. And then is somebody going to go to New Orleans? Is somebody going to go in there and try to salvage all the copper plumbing and wire? I mean, is there going to be a salvage business we haven't even thought of yet? Wow. So it's the speed that's the problem. Let's get to work.
And so that's really dark. How do you stay motivated, try to like...
Oh, because... Oh, man. So who is from Iowa? Anyone from Iowa?
No hands.
Iowa gets 25% of its electricity from the wind, competing head-to-head with oil and gas. A friend of mine lives in Coweta, Oklahoma, Broken Arrow, Tulsa, suburb of Tulsa, Oklahoma. They have earthquakes. They don't like earthquakes. It's from fracking. It's just like nobody thought you could frack to the extent that you'd have earthquakes, like magnitude 5, like real things. And nobody wants that. And then Texas in the springtime gets 10% of its electricity from the wind. Now, I'm not saying the wind is the whole answer, but it just shows you what's possible. Oh, the other thing, young people, transmission lines, better electric power lines. I mean, what we have doesn't suck, but we can do way better, I'm sure of it. So the jet fuel, transmission lines, solar hot water. Come on, man, let's go. This will be cool. Let's make changes.
This is Climate One, changing the conversation about America's energy, economy, and environment. You can listen to all of our programs and subscribe to our podcast at our website, climateone.org. Now let's get back to our discussion on all things climate with science educator Bill Nye.
First question from Facebook for Bill Nye, from Jessica Hill on Facebook. What do you make of environmental movements within the Christian framework, such as creation care?
I don't know creation care, but...
It's just a religious term for stewardship of God's creation.
Sounds great. I mean, we are more alike than we are different. So go for it. But whatever it is, the Earth is not 6,000 years old. And trying to base your science or your understanding of the Earth on the idea that it was 6,000 years old and that 4,000 years ago there was a flood around the whole Earth that nobody wrote down except some people in Mesopotamia, be skeptical of the rest of your geology. So, yes, creation care, go, yes.
Other question from Facebook for Bill Nye, Adam Alford. Aren't we worried about our education system not cultivating science literacy for the next generation?
If I were king of the forest, we want science every day in every grade. From preschool through senior and high school, science every day in every grade. And if you're a teacher, thank you, sure. Yes, wow, brilliant. If you're a teacher and you're uncomfortable teaching science, just get comfortable because kids love it. Blow stuff up. It's fun. And it doesn't mean you have to do science for 6 hours every day. Just do a little science. Every kindergarten class, a little science in fourth grade. Kids love it. It's fun for you. And the big thing we want to get everybody is not the facts of science. Yes, it's great. I met a kid the other day that memorized the periodic table, knows every number and name of element, alphabetical order or in order, in numerical order. But what we want is for people to learn the process, to think critically. Like, is this reasonable? Is what I'm being told or what I'm reading online reasonable? If we could learn that skill, we could change the world.
Let's go to our audience question. First one over here for Bill Nye. Yes, welcome to Climate One.
Why did you become a scientist? How did you become a scientist? And when did you become a scientist?
These are great questions. So I've been asked this before, so I'll tell you this. I was playing Hearts. Do you know that game? It's a card game that features tricks like bridge. And I was sitting on the front porch learning this grown-up game, and I got stung by a bee. And I think I was 3 and a half, I think. It was in the summertime. And this was traumatic. This hurt. I didn't like it. Ouch. Sting. Ow. Crying. Miserable. 3 and a half. Can't understand this. Then my mother put ammonia on it. Do you know what ammonia, you know Windex? That's the main ingredient in Windex. And on the bottle is a skull and crossbones. My mother's trying to kill me, which I understand. She tried a few more times, but the pain went away. And I just was fascinated with that. And then I found out along about that same time that my grandfather, my mother's father, who had died before I was born, was an organic chemist. And they gave me his glassware to play with. And this is back in the day, like my nephew and niece are chemical engineers, and they use a software, ChemDraw. Anybody into ChemDraw? It's a party. But my grandfather didn't have any such thing. Instead, the skills that he learned were blowing glass. So I just thought it was the coolest thing. And I just thought science was cool. And then I found out that you could do science for a living as an engineer. I sort of found that out when I was working in a bicycle shop. And so it's been a lifelong process, my friend. Science is how we know nature. It's the coolest. I think it's the best idea humans have ever had. Thank you.
Thanks for that question. She's smiling. Let's go to our next audience question for Jason Susberg and Bill Nye.
Hi, I'm Sierra, and I'm really excited to be here. There's been a sort of fight between environmentalists on either doing something about the problem of climate change or learning to live with it. And where do you stand on that?
The answer is everything all at once. The answer is, wait, you're both right. In other words, the expression is we want to work the problem from both ends. We want to have a less of an effect or bad effect on the environment, but we also want to innovate so that we can provide clean water, electricity, and internet to everyone. We got to work it both ways. And the shortest cut to this, by the way, is to raise the standard of living of girls and women. When you do that, thank you. I mean, thank you for the applause, you guys, but this isn't really, I didn't make this up, but when you raise this standard of living of girls, and it's generally through education, when they grow up and become women, in general, they have fewer kids, and the kids they have a better quality of life because they have more resources. And then they have less of an impact on the environment. However, note well, humankind now moves more rock and soil than Mother Nature does. This is really a sobering and amazing idea. With all the bulldozers for all the shopping malls, all the explosives and all the mines, all the explosives to make highways, humans move more dirt than nature. So we're in charge here. We are running the planet, and we have to take responsibility for it. And so it is terrifying and cool. It is sobering and empowering. And you are going to be a big part of that. Go get them. Save the world.
Let's get our next question for Bill Nye and Jason Susberg.
I actually started thinking about this watching the Venice episode of Bill Nye Saves the World. What do you think is more important to focus on at the moment, employing defense mechanisms against the effects of climate change or working on a kind of reversing climate change and stopping our impact on...
Reversing climate change thing's really hard. Instead, we're going to have to learn to live with higher carbon dioxide levels. I'm not saying it can't be done. It's just really hard. Once you get the roast in the oven, for people who are not vegans, once the roast is in the oven and you take it out of the oven, it keeps cooking. The heat keeps moving into the middle of the roast. The same is true for the Earth, in a sense. There's so much extra carbon dioxide put there so fast, we're not going to be able to take it out at the rate we put it in over the last 2.5 centuries. But the longest journey begins with a single step. So as I say, we do everything all at once. Provide clean water, electricity, internet, and produce zero emissions. Let's go. Let's get her done.
Next question for Bill Nye and Jason Susberg at Climate One.
My question is, what are we, like, conscious, scientific, rational people, what are we doing to take personal accountability? And, like, primarily diet seems to be the most influential thing for climate change. So I'm wondering, factory farming causes deforestation, water, land, grain, and antibiotic waste, desertification, ocean acidification, with overwhelming evidence saying that animal agriculture is the leading cause of environmental devastation and climate change. What are we doing to address that? And when you asked about agriculture specifically, you kind of like chose to go to GMOs and not animal agriculture, but it seems to be like the most significant impact.
Thank you.
So this argument that animal husbandry is the single biggest thing affecting climate change may be right. I mean, you may be right. But people want more and more protein. And so I am huge, I'm not kidding you, huge fan of crickets. They're delicious. And so this could very well be the future. And in other words, people's taste, in pun intended, in diet changes. So I'm very hopeful. And I think the way to address it, the way to address your concerns about animal husbandry is through regulation, where we don't overuse antibiotics, we don't destroy the environment, we don't acidify the ocean, we don't over-fertilize fields to create feed for farm animals. I'm right there. It all sounds good, you guys. But nevertheless, people want protein, and they want to live the way we live in the West, in the Western, in the developed world. So we need to work together to find new sources of protein. And as I say, I'm not joking, you guys. I think insects have great potential. They're freaking everywhere. The biggest problem is carbon dioxide. That is the biggest greenhouse gas problem. Methane is a problem. Ocean acidification is a problem. But we have 7.4 billion people, and we're going to have 9 and probably 10 billion before it starts to go down. And the rate of growth is slowing, but the growth is it's still growing. The human population is still growing. All those people are going to want to eat, and this is going to have an effect on the environment. That's why I say we're in charge. Let's be in charge. Let's make good management decisions as humans. Yes.
Next question.
Decarbonization. In California, approximately 40% of greenhouse gas emissions come from transportation sector. And so we're working here in California on electric vehicles as a solution to the policy, which is to that problem. It seems to work in California because a lot of our electricity comes from renewable sources in an increasing amount. But in other states, we don't have that same situation. We have a lot more fossil fuels that provide electricity. So what is your thinking about electric vehicles as a solution to greenhouse gases?
Electric vehicles are a key, in my opinion. And, you know, my opinion is correct, so big time saver. No, there's two problems with cars. The first one is you're burning fossil fuels everywhere, and that becomes carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide and unburned gas, gasoline, ends up in the atmosphere. The other thing is the pollution you make is so spread out. It's just you're spreading the pollution all over the map. So electric vehicles, and by the way, everybody, after you drive an electric car, you guys, you never go back. You just, no, why would you want that old clunky thing that's loud and spew, and you got to stop and buy gas? You mean I can't just go home and plug in and have a full charge in the morning? You have to stop at a gas station? What, do you want a Pepsi that badly? And so you'll never go back. And the technology is finally coming on. And by the technology, I mean mainstream automakers. Is there anybody here who does not have a Tesla? A couple people. And they're cool, but it is regular auto manufacturer, you guys. It's the same problem. It's assembly line. You put the thing together, it comes out. So other thing, right now it's estimated that operating an electric car costs about a quarter of operating a gas-powered car. They're quiet. When I'm on the phone and hands-free in the car, people think I'm holding the phone in my ear because it's so quiet. You'll never go back. The performance is better in every way around corners. The weight is low. The center of gravity is low. They corner. Everything's better. So, yes, electric vehicles. But I imagine, I just think about my grandfather who went into World War I on a horse. And I guess riding a horse was something you learned to do at the turn of the last century. It was just something everybody learned to do. He rode around at night in France on a horse with trenches everywhere. He married a French woman, girl, came to the States. But 25 years later, when people got involved in World War II, what I whimsically call the extended dance mix of the same war, nobody was on a horse. Nobody who was serious about fighting a war was on a horse. So I think of electric vehicles as an intermediate step. Like, I think there's going to be self-driving cars before you know it, self-driving trucks for sure. And then people are going to start asking the old question about the efficiency of rubber-tired vehicles in general. You know, the big advantage of railroads and subways is steel wheels on steel tracks have way, way less friction than rubber tires on roads. So electric vehicles are a huge part of the solution. First of all, they're inherently more efficient. Secondly, they don't spread the pollution all over the place. Oh, I can get on the second law of thermodynamics. Understand, a heat engine is the worst thing, man. Burning gasoline, the best you're going to do is 70%. Because of the second law of thermodynamics, which is this evil thing that makes heat spread out through the universe and we're all going to die. So, yeah, electric vehicles are better. You guys, test drive an electric car. Just try it. Well, what if I want to drive to Minneapolis? Very few of us do that. I mean, no, there are a few people that do. I'll get you that. But most of us choose to fly because it's faster, cheaper, and far less dangerous. And so you just don't, that old idea of the family vacation and getting the big car for that is sort of finally fading. Stay tuned. The future's going to be cool.
And we have to wrap it up.
Oh, sorry.
We've been talking with science educator Bill Nye and Jason Susberg, who made the new documentary about Bill Nye's life and work. Podcasts of this and other Climate One shows recorded with a live audience here at the Commonwealth Club are available wherever you podcast. When you download one, please leave us a comment or a rating. We want to know what you think about our conversations about energy, food, water, electric cars, science, all things climate, and more. I'm Greg Dalton. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. That was great, man. Thank you.
Climate One is a special project of the Commonwealth Club of California. Kelly Pennington directs our audience engagement. Carlos Manuel is our producer. The audio engineer is William Bloom. Annie Chelsea and Devin Strolovich are the editors. I'm Greg Dalton, the executive producer and host. The Commonwealth Club CEO is Dr. Gloria Duffy. Join us next time for a conversation about America's energy, economy, and environment. Climate One is produced in association with KQED Public Radio.